Alex Kendall had always been a practical man, the kind of person whose feet were planted so firmly on the ground that it seemed that nothing happened at Yellowstone, where he worked, could ever uproot him. His days were all about routine and scheduling, and his nights were filled with paperwork. He knew every trail, every tree, and every creature that called the park home. That was until the day the footprints appeared.
Now, you probably know that Yellowstone National Park is like stepping into another world. It's this massive park, stretching over Wyoming, Montana, and Idaho, and it's packed with incredible sights. You've got geysers shooting up hot water and steam high into the air, like Old Faithful. Then there are these stunning, colorful hot springs, like the Grand Prismatic Spring, with its crazy bright colors. And the park is also full of wild animals, bison, elk, bears, just roaming around in their natural habitat. Plus, the scenery with mountains, forests, and rivers is something out of a painting. It's a place that makes you feel small, but in the best way, reminding you of the raw beauty and power of nature. So, it was in the midst of all this beauty that Alex came across the footprints. They were inexplicably huge, dwarfing even the largest bear prints he had encountered in his years of service. They meandered through the park, cutting a path through the underbrush and coming to an abrupt halt at the Norris Geyser Basin. At first, Alex dismissed them. Pranksters, he thought, armed with shovels and a sense of humor. But even his rational mind couldn't shake the odd feeling that settled in his gut, like an unwelcome guest. The stories from the campers didn't help. Whispers of a whispering giant snaked their way through the campsites, delivered by wide-eyed visitors who spoke of a presence that was both awe-inspiring and unnerving. The visitors spoke of hearing a gentle hum that lulled them to sleep, yet filled their dreams with visions of horrible creatures. Alex, ever the skeptic, listened and nodded and reminded them of the park rules, because that's all he could think of saying back to them, all while his mind quietly filed away each account. After all, wasn't it his duty to ensure the safety of Yellowstone's guests? If there was some large creature out there, it was within his work duties to find it and understand what was happening. And that is when he began his night hikes. Alex traversed the park at night, the beam of his flashlight cutting through the night like a signal flare. He sought out the footprints and followed them until they vanished, and then scoured the area for signs of what could have made them. But each night, he returned to his cabin with nothing to show for his efforts.
It wasn't until one particularly clear night, when the stars were bright, that the encounter happened. The air was alive with the usual sounds of the park at night. The hoots of owls, the rustling of leaves, the distant rumbles of geysers. And then, in the middle of all this, a new sound emerged, a soft whisper that seemed to speak directly to his soul.
Alex turned around to look in the direction of the noise, and there it was. The creature was a silhouette against the night sky, immense and imposing. Its eyes, luminescent and wise, met his own, and in that gaze, Alex knew that his world had just totally changed. It stood there, part of the night yet distinct, a figure so massive that for a second, Alex's breath hitched in his throat. This creature, it was like nothing he'd ever seen or heard of. Not in any book, not in any late-night tale told around a campfire. It was as if the creature was made of the park itself, towering, wild, and ancient.
Its fur, if you could call it that, seemed to ripple with the colors of the forest, blending seamlessly into the darkness. It moved with an easy, fluid motion that didn't match its size. Each step was deliberate and silent. The creature's face was strangely peaceful, with deep-set eyes that reflected brightly as it looked around. Its muzzle was broad and covered in a fine mist, looking like the cool night air was settling there. Alex stood, rooted to his spot, his flashlight now a forgotten weight in his hand.
He realized as he gazed at the creature that this was the whispering giant the campers had talked about. It didn't seem possible, but here it was, a being that was part of the park's lore come to life. It was then that the creature moved closer, and the soft whisper became clear. It wasn't speaking words, but somehow, Alex knew that it was some sort of communication. The creature didn't stay long. It turned, its movement still fluid, and walked back into the darkness, disappearing as if it had never been there at all. But the footprints remained, and this was proof that what Alex had seen wasn't a figment of his imagination. The next day, the park was alive with its usual hustle and bustle. Tourists with cameras, children with ice cream cones, rangers setting off for their duties. But Alex wasn't the same. His routine continued. His paperwork was still filled out, but his thoughts were constantly drawn to the wilder parts of Yellowstone, to the shadows and wondering what else might be out there.
Alex never saw the whispering giant again, but sometimes, when the park was quiet, he would hear that soft hum, and he would smile a knowing smile, because now he understood that some things in Yellowstone were beyond explanation, beyond routine, and definitely beyond paperwork. They were part of the magic that made the park more than just any old park. And as for the footprints, they were eventually covered by the snows and the rains and the passage of time. But Alex, he would remember them forever, and the encounter would continue to live on in his mind for years to come. Next up, we're unraveling a tale that's as eerie as it is compelling, straight from the heart of Yosemite National Park. This story involves Jennifer Hazelwood, and by the end of this story, you'll be Googling national parks and wondering how deep the rabbit hole goes when it comes to park rangers and the secrets they keep. Jennifer Hazelwood's story begins far from Yosemite, in the bustling city of San Francisco. She's a graphic designer by trade, working for a trendy startup in the heart of Silicon Valley.
Her days are filled with creating visually stunning designs for the digital world, a job that demands both her creativity and her ability to thrive under pressure. Growing up in a small coastal town in Northern California, Jennifer's love for the outdoors was instilled in her from a young age. Her parents, both educators, were avid hikers and weekend adventurers, often taking Jennifer and her younger brother on camping trips across the state's national parks. These experiences nurtured a deep appreciation for nature's beauty and its mysteries, sparking a curiosity that would stay with her into adulthood. After moving to San Francisco for college and eventually settling there, Jennifer maintained her connection to nature through photography, capturing the raw beauty of California's landscapes. Her apartment, a cozy space filled with plants and nature prints, serves as a sanctuary from her hectic work life. Weekends and vacations are her escape, and it's this passion for exploration and a desire to capture the unseen that led her to Yosemite that fateful weekend, unknowingly setting the stage for an encounter that would change her life forever. So that weekend, it was a last-minute decision for Jennifer to spend the weekend in Yosemite. But the trip started off like any other. The drive from her apartment in San Francisco to Yosemite National Park was a journey she knew well, yet it never lost its sense of excitement and anticipation. Leaving the city's foggy mornings behind, she would navigate through the bustling streets, making her way towards the Bay Bridge, the city gradually shrinking in her rearview mirror. As the urban landscape gave way to rolling hills and open skies, the stress of her work week melted away. The route took her through the heart of California's agricultural heartland, where vast fields stretched out on either side, punctuated by the occasional orchard or vineyard. Approaching the foothills of the Sierra Nevada, the road began to wind upwards, each turn bringing her closer to the majestic beauty of Yosemite. With her favorite playlist on the radio and the windows down to let in the crisp mountain air, Jennifer's drive to Yosemite was more than just a transition from city to wilderness. It was a time spent relaxing her mind. Jennifer set up camp in a less populated area of the park, eager to detach from the world and immerse herself in nature's silence. The first day passed without incident, filled with long hikes in the serene beauty of the park. Her site was surrounded by tall trees and a small trickling stream. The air had that crispness to it that fills your lungs with energy. She spent the first day exploring the area and getting to know what all was around. However, as dusk fell on the second day, things took a turn for the bizarre. Jennifer decided to explore a nearby trail she had heard offered stunning views of the valley. With just her backpack and a flashlight, she set off, unaware of the chilling experience that awaited her. As the light began to fade, Jennifer noticed something odd, a series of strange marks on the ground, unlike any animal tracks she was familiar with. They were oddly spaced, as if whatever made them was walking on two legs but wasn't human. Curiosity piqued, she followed the tracks, her flashlight cutting through the growing darkness. The air grew colder, and an unnerving silence enveloped the woods. Suddenly, her flashlight beam caught a glimpse of something in the distance. A pale, emaciated figure, standing on two legs, with eyes that reflected the light back at her, like a deer caught in headlights. Its appearance was otherworldly, its limbs disproportionately long with joints that bent in ways that sent her brain into overdrive. The creature's skin was a ghastly white, almost luminescent against the dark backdrop of the forest, hanging loosely on its frame as if it was too large for its skeletal body. It stood motionless and its presence was an intrusion into this world. Jennifer thought she knew, a stark violation of the natural order that she was used to in the park. Its eyes, unblinking, were fixated on her, glowing with an intensity that was as hypnotic as it was horrifying. The creature's head was bald, and its face was devoid of any fat, with hollow cheeks and a thin, lipless mouth that seemed incapable of human expression. There was an intelligence in its gaze, though, that suggested a disturbing awareness. Frozen in fear, Jennifer watched as the creature, which she later learned was referred to as a crawler, by those few who had encountered them, stared back at her for what felt like an eternity before disappearing into the darkness with an agility that seemed impossible for its gaunt appearance. Racing back to her camp, Jennifer packed up and left the park before dawn. She couldn't shake the feeling of being watched, and the image of the creature haunted her. Once home, she did what any of us would do. She started looking for answers. Diving into online forums and cryptid communities, Jennifer shared her story, only to find that she wasn't alone. Others had seen the crawler, but speaking out often led to ridicule, or, even more disturbingly, encounters with park authorities urging them to keep quiet. Determined to prove what she saw, Jennifer returned to Yosemite, armed with a camera and a resolve to capture evidence. After days of searching, she succeeded. The footage was grainy, but it unmistakably showed the creature she encountered, validating her story and those of others who had seen it but were too afraid to speak out. But here's where it gets even weirder. When Jennifer tried to go public with her evidence, she hit a wall of silence. Attempts to contact park authorities were met with denials or dismissals. It was as if there was a concerted effort to keep the existence of the crawler under wraps, to maintain the image of Yosemite as a serene, untouched wilderness. Now, you might be asking, why would the park rangers want to hide this? Is it fear of causing panic, or is there something more sinister at play? The truth is, we don't have all the answers, but Jennifer's story opens up a Pandora's box of questions about what's really happening in our national parks and the lengths some will go to keep the public in the dark. So, what do you think? Is Jennifer's encounter a once-in-a-lifetime anomaly? Or is there a deeper mystery lurking in the shadowy forests of Yosemite? The story of Jennifer Hazelwood reminds us that sometimes the most incredible tales are the ones hidden in plain sight, dismissed by those who should be paying attention the most.
Have you ever heard of a story that just sticks with you? Like you're sitting around a campfire and someone tells you something that gets under your skin. And it doesn't matter how many times you shake your head or laugh it off, it's still there in the back of your mind. Well, I've got a tale like that for you. I'm a park ranger in the Great Smoky Mountains, and one evening, I came face to face with something so bizarre, and what I saw wasn't just odd, it was downright otherworldly. This isn't just a story, it's my experience with the unexplained, and it might just have you looking over your shoulder the next time you're out in the fog.
So, becoming a park ranger wasn't exactly what I had planned. Life's funny like that, tossing you around until you land somewhere you never expected. I was actually on the fast track to a degree in computer science, spending more hours in front of screens than I did sleeping. But then, my grandpa, he passed away. He was full-blooded Cherokee, and the kind of man who seemed like he was born from the soil of the Smokies themselves. He used to spin these wild tales about the mountains, about spirits and legends that could make the hairs on your neck do a little dance. And when he was gone, I realized I didn't just miss him. I missed the stories, the wilderness, the connection to something bigger than myself. So, I dropped out of school. Yeah, just like that. I traded my laptop for hiking boots and never looked back. I started as a volunteer, figuring I'd find my way back to tech eventually. But the more time I spent in those mountains, the more I felt like I was exactly where I was supposed to be. I worked my way up, learned everything I could about the flora, the fauna, and the history, especially the stories of my ancestors. Eventually, I became a full-time park ranger, and now it's been going on about 10 years. Been doing these same patrols for years, and most nights blend into one another. But this one night was different. It had been an ordinary start. I clocked in, grabbed my gear, and set out. The air was crisp, typical for the season, and the woods were quiet. I was near Klingman's Dome, which is the highest point in the park, at 6,643 feet high. Fog is a given up there. It rolls in like clockwork. But that night, the mist felt different. It was thicker, almost oily, and it didn't move right. There's a rhythm to how fog drifts through the trees. But this was still and thick. And in that stillness, I could see strange shapes coming and going. I've seen deer, bears, the occasional lost hiker. But these shapes were different. One was kind of humanoid but twisted, elongated. I know every critter in these parts, and none fit the bill. It wasn't just the shape either. It was the vibe it gave off. Like when you know someone's watching you, that prickle on the back of your neck. It was like that. I should have turned back, radioed it in maybe, but at this point I didn't think it would be anything I would need help with. So I followed, real slow, trying not to make a sound. The shape stayed just out of clear sight, always obscured by that weird mist. I followed it down old paths, overgrown trails that we don't use much, trails that the Cherokee used long before any ranger. Now, I've heard stories, old legends, tales to scare newbies, or stuff the locals talk about when the nights are long. They speak of spirits and creatures, things that belong to the land in ways we can't. I never paid them much mind. Give me a bear tracker and a good flashlight over ghost stories any day. But that night, those stories came creeping back into my mind. I was in their world, the world of legends. The path took me to a clearing, a place I'd been 100 times before, but it was like I'd never seen it before in my life. The mist swirled into patterns that felt familiar and foreign all at once. The shapes were clearer now, more of them circling something. I hid behind a thick trunk, peeking out. The central figure, that twisted humanoid shape, it was doing something, a dance or a ritual maybe. The air was humming and charged with something I couldn't explain. And then, the eyes. I felt them, and I knew. I knew in a way that you know the sky's up and the ground's down, that I wasn't supposed to be there. I was an intruder. I backed away, slow, then faster, heart pounding like it wanted out of my body. The mist seemed to chase me, or maybe I was just spooked. I broke into a run, didn't stop till I hit the ranger station, out of breath, out of my wits and full of questions. I told my boss, described what I saw as best as I could without sounding unhinged. He listened, quiet-like, then told me to take the next couple of nights off. Said sometimes the park shows you things you're not meant to see. I went home, but sleep didn't come easy. Every shadow in my room felt like those eyes watching. The next day, I did some digging and talked to some folks. Cherokee legends are full of beings and spirits that live in a layer of the world we don't, guardians of the land, and creatures that walk in the mists. There was one legend, barely a footnote in a dusty old book, about the Yunwi Sunzdi, humanoid nature spirits from Cherokee culture that sometimes reveal themselves. I instantly felt that that is what I saw. I couldn't leave it alone, though. I went back to the clearing in the daylight, nothing but trees and the sound of birds. No mist, no shapes, no eyes. But the land felt different to me now. I've done my patrols since then. The mist comes and goes, and sometimes, just on the edge of my vision, I think I see a shape that's a reminder of that day. I don't follow it, though. Some things, you gotta let be. The Smokies are old, way older than us, full of beauty and mystery, and some things that don't need explaining. That's the thing about this place. It's full of stories. Some are as old as the hills and passed down by the Cherokee, who have called this land home long before my badge ever glinted in the sun. Other stories are newer, shared between rangers like a sacred trust. Every rustle in the underbrush, every unexplained echo, they're all chapters of a grand ongoing saga that I've now become a part of. Alright, so I was out on one of my usual walks that I take every day after dinner. I tend to wander around downtown when I need to clear my head, and that evening was no different. Work had been a mess, and I just needed to breathe a bit. I ended up on the far edge of town, where the houses are sparse, and the streetlights only work sometimes. There's this one house that's been empty for as long as I can remember. Windows boarded up, garden overgrown, the works. Kids around here say it's haunted, but you know how kids are with any place that looks like it should be in a horror movie. I'd never given it much thought, but that night, I don't know, I was drawn to it. The gate was off its hinges and it squeaked in the most cliche, spooky way possible as I nudged it open. I remember chuckling to myself, thinking about how I'd tell people that I'd become the main character in a ghost story. I walked up the overgrown path, my sneakers crunching on the gravel and dead leaves. The house loomed over me, all shadows and silhouettes against the sky. The front door was open a bit, which was weird, right? I mean, abandoned or not, you'd think it'd be shut or at least locked. I pushed it open, the wood groaning like an old man settling into his favorite chair. The inside was just as you'd expect. Dust-covered furniture, wallpaper peeling like old skin, and that smell, a mix of mold and decay. I wandered through the ground floor rooms, finding nothing but the remains of a life long gone. It was sad, in a way. You could almost hear the echoes of laughter and life that once filled those walls. Then I heard it. A noise from below, like something being dragged across a floor. My first thought was animals, maybe raccoons or something. But it didn't quite fit. It was too deliberate. Curiosity. Well, it's a real pain sometimes. It got the better of me, and before I knew it, I was pulling open the door to the basement and shining my flashlight down the rickety stairs. The air was cooler there, and each step creaked a warning that I wasn't welcome. I reached the bottom, and the beam from my flashlight cut through the darkness like a knife. Dust danced in the light, and for a second everything was still. Then I saw them. Eyes. Reflecting the light from my flashlight like tiny mirrors. They were attached to, I don't even know what to call it. It wasn't human, that's for sure. It was hunched over, with skin that seemed to drink in the shadows around it. And when it moved, it was like it was part of the darkness, sliding back into it with a grace that made my skin crawl. The thing, this creature, was like a patch of night that had peeled itself off the floor. It wasn't just in the shadows. It was the shadows, or that's how it seemed. It had limbs, too many and too long, bending in ways that didn't make sense, like branches in a strong wind. Its head was a distorted shape, the eyes too bright, too knowing, and it was silent, oh, so silent as it moved, like it was made of wind. The air seemed to thicken around it, and for a moment, it felt like the whole basement was alive. Then, with that same hiss, that soft sound of shadows sliding over shadows, it vanished. It disappeared into the shadows as if it had never been there. And suddenly, my legs worked again. I don't think I've ever run so fast in my life. I bolted up those stairs, out of the house, down the path, and didn't stop until I was back under the streetlights, gasping for breath. I kept looking over my shoulder the whole way home, half expecting to see those eyes following me out of the darkness. But there was nothing, just the night and the sound of my own footsteps. I haven't gone back there, haven't even walked on that side of town since then. And maybe it was just my imagination, you know? Maybe it was just a trick of the light, or a shadow cast by some old piece of furniture. But I can't shake the feeling that what I saw was real, that there's something in that house, something that isn't supposed to exist. And the weirdest part? I can't tell anyone about it. Who'd believe me? They'd say it was stress or that I was seeing things. But you know me, I'm not one for making up stories. So there you go, that's what happened. That's why I've been jumpy lately. But let's keep this between us, all right? I don't want to be that guy, the one people whisper about, saying he's lost it, seeing monsters in the dark. But I know what I saw, and I'm just not ready to face what that means. Not yet.
It was the height of summer of 2017, and I was baking away under the unforgiving Texas sun. I was stationed as a park ranger at Palo Duro Canyon State Park. It was a job that usually meant spending most of my time rescuing wayward campers or cleaning up after overenthusiastic junior scout. I remember that day well, mainly because of Jimmy. He was Billy's kid from the supply tent, and he'd managed to get a family of raccoons stuck in the waste bin again. As the squeals echoed through the canyon, I laughed. What an absurd situation. And it wasn't the first time that it happened. Life was always kind of odd out here. So when the first reports came whispering in, speaking of a strange creature in the locality, I didn't take it too seriously. It was probably another case of overactive tourists taking a coyote for a grizzly, or a stray dog for a wolf. You'd be surprised how the imagination flares in the wilderness. However, as a park ranger, it was my duty to investigate, regardless of my personal skepticism. Plus, it promised a break from Jimmy's shenanigans.
The rest of the day passed in a blur of typical ranger duties, monitoring fire conditions, maintaining hiking trails, giving directions to lost tourists. It was the banality of my routine. As evening descended and the Texas sky was set ablaze with hues of red and orange, my radio crackled with the code 34-OUT, a signal used for unregistered animals or unidentified species. A couple camping near Hackberry Camp Area had reported a weird creature lurking about their site. Steering my ranger truck towards the location, my mind raced with possibilities. Could it be a panther, a bear, or perhaps a bobcat? Odd, I reckoned, considering the location wasn't particularly notorious for such disturbances. But working in the great outdoors teaches you to never say never. The dusk was settling into darkness as I pulled up near Hackberry. Armed with just a flashlight and years of ranger experience, the discreet sounds of wildlife were my questionable comfort. From a whining insect chorus to the occasional rustle or distant hoot, the night was a symphony of unseen happenings. Eerily, however, what first caught my attention wasn't the sight of anything out of the ordinary, but rather a smell. Fouler than anything I'd come across during my years of service, it was a concoction of rotten meat and wet dog. Add to that hints of burnt rubber, which seemed out of place in the heart of the wilderness. The stench was pervasive, seeming to seep into the very ground beneath my boots and claw its way up into the pre-dawn chill. As I explored deeper into the forest, a low growl echoed from the direction of a grove of Joshua trees, giving me pause. It was deep and resonating, far from the sounds commonplace in these wild lands. I found myself feeling as though I was entering uncharted territory, the atmosphere tangibly shifting into something more ominous. As I trudged forward, breaking through the undergrowth, I noticed peculiar signs. Boot-like paw prints unusually large for a native creature, and broken twigs hanging from branches too high up to be the work of small critters, signaling the presence of something substantial. The growling intensified as I neared a large, gnarled tree, whose shadow stood rippling under my flashlight. By now, my ranger bravado had worn thin, replaced by a primal sense of self-preservation. I should have walked away, but years of ingrained curiosity took the better of me. I inched closer, mentally kicking myself for not having my service pistol at hand. Angling my flashlight towards the rugged bark, my beam unveiled a creature that defied belief. Towering over me, it must have been about 7 feet tall. It was the size of a grizzly, but with an outline eerily similar to a man's. Its body, muscular and hunched, was hidden under a layer of dark, coarse fur. Its beastly stature was intensified by powerful thighs, broad shoulders, and unusually long, jagged claws glinting ominously in my flashlight's glow. Its face, a haunting meld of canine and human, bore a pronounced brow ridge, a scarred snout, coarse whiskers, and furrowed brows over deep-set glowing yellow eyes. It's as if it was somehow both man and animal. Its gaze held mine, a raw mix of curiosity and animalistic warning. The sheer bizarreness of the creature sent my mind into a whirl, teetering on the edge of fear and fascination. As its guttural growl cut through the silence yet again, the reality pierced through. I was standing inches away from the mythical dogman of Texas lore. Paralyzed by the bizarre standoff, I don't remember how long we stood there locked in that gaze, but the spell ultimately shattered with the creature's unsettling howl. It was a drawn-out, echoing roar, resonating with an animalistic fervor that sent a chill down my spine. The creature then turned and vanished into the trees, dislodging rocks and foliage in its hurry. With its departure, an uncanny silence took hold of the area, punctuated only by my labored breathing. Swallowed by the night, the terror of the encounter gradually subsided, leaving me questioning my sanity and the very nature of the world we comfortably inhabit. Was it a figment of an overworked imagination, or a real creature of flesh and blood? And what was I going to tell those campers? My story isn't one of heroism or of a man conquering his fear. I didn't tell them about the dogman. I told them there was a mountain lion nearby and to get out. That seemed to work well enough. I can't imagine anyone would believe me. Not my supervisors and definitely not any of my friends. I never saw the creature again out there, but I have no doubt it is still lurking somewhere in the desert.
I've got a story from my camping days that might just fit into your channel. This happened back in the summer of 2010, when a group of buddies and I decided to go camping in the Rockies. Colorado in the summertime is one of my favorite places to be. There's just something about the mountains that feels like home to me. It's hard to explain if you've never felt it for yourself. To say I was excited to go out there that year was an understatement. But there is something eerie about the wilderness at night. No matter how much I love nature, there's no denying that it can get a bit unnerving after dark. But that wasn't enough to keep me away.
It took a little bit to get everyone coordinated and get us all out there. The first day was all about setting up our camp and acclimating ourselves to our home for the next few days. We chose this fantastic open spot near a stream. There was a meadow stretched out behind us, and a few large rock formations nearby. God, it was stunning. Setting up the tents, unpacking our stuff, getting a fire going, it was all part of the experience. There was a strange joy in these simple tasks. The first night rolled around quickly with laughter, storyline swapping, and too many burnt sausages being grilled on the open fire. The sun fell, the moon rose, stories ended, and we crawled into our sleeping bags more or less in that order. When you're out there in the isolated serenity of the woods, meals take on a primary significance. Mornings meant a hearty breakfast cooked on an open fire. Afternoons were filled with day hikes and exploring our surroundings. Coming back after the hikes, drenched and tired, we found the camp just as we left it, but there was an eerie feeling around camp, a feeling of being watched. I had heard footsteps around camp the night before, which I initially dismissed as the work of some woodland critters. Now, the thing about camping in a group is that there's always someone trying to drum up a scare. Rick was our resident scaremonger. He insisted that the noises we heard were a bear, but the rest of us thought it was him playing a joke. But there was an underlying feeling that something wasn't right. Then some strange occurrences began. Things would go missing from our camp, only to be found later at strange places. Like my buddy's boot ending up on top of a tree, my backpack found completely open with the contents scattered around. We started getting irritated with each other over the pranks. Everyone was blaming someone else, and it was starting to get on everyone's nerves. But then we started hearing this deep growl from the nearby bushes, coming and going just like the wind. There were howls too that didn't fit the sounds of any of the local animals we all knew. Now, I won't say we were scared, but on some nights, those sounds did make my blood run cold. The nights became restless, the noises far too disturbing to ignore, and that ever-persistent feeling of being watched. It just wouldn't leave us in peace. The next morning, we found an enormous footprint near our campsite. I know this is going to sound crazy, but the footprint was human, only larger, much larger. You could see the outline of all the toes. There was no way it was a bear. Our hunting boots lined side by side would have struggled to fill its dimensions. We all were thinking the same thing, but nobody wanted to say it. The hours rolled on, the sun dipped below the mountains, and we tried to forget about the footprint. We were gathered around the campfire when we realized that Joe was missing. He didn't respond to any of the shouted mockeries or threats. So we split up, grab our headlamps, and begin searching for him. About 15 minutes into the search, and I stumbled upon a frightening sight. There was a gigantic figure, pitch black against the moonlit wilderness, standing behind a thicket of trees. It must have been some 8 or 9 feet tall. The face was barely visible, with a heavy-set jaw, broad cheekbones, and deep-set eyes. A shivering chill rattled its way down my spine. Even from a distance, a putrid smell reached me. It was a musty, gamey scent, undoubtedly coming from the creature. But before I could even shout out to my friends, this behemoth of a figure turned to face me. Knotting the fear in my stomach, I took a step back and broke a twig. Its loud crack sounded like a gunshot in the quiet night. In a blink, the creature turned its head my way and let out a snarl. It was bone-chilling and wild. I was frozen on the spot, but all of a sudden it started sprinting in the direction opposite to mine. I stumbled back to the camp. Nobody believed me, of course. Half of them were too pumped up on adrenaline, and the other half too worried about Joe. Joe never did return to the camp, though. We waited all night, calling, shouting, signaling with our headlamps. At the first crack of dawn, we packed up and started on our way back, notifying the authorities once we were back in civilization. Joe was found the following day by search and rescue, and he was in quite a state. He wouldn't talk about what happened, how he got lost, or what he found out there. He still won't speak of it to this day, but I am almost certain he saw the same creature that I did. But I don't know all of what his encounter entailed. All I know is that he's not the same man since that experience. And to be honest, neither am I.
I've been a ranger at the Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve for the last 18 years. I've seen a lot. I've seen hail in the middle of summer, rattlesnakes slithering about in frigid temperatures, tourists thinking they can climb the dunes in flip-flops. But this was something else. It wasn't something I signed up for. My job is to keep the park safe and preserve for the generation and the ones yet to come. I get to traipse about in the largest sandbox of North America, making sure people and wildlife coexist in harmony, and the ecosystem thrives as Mother Nature intended.
On the day in question, it was pretty much business as usual. I had started my rounds early, braving the biting chill of the Colorado morning, and did my best in maintaining the delicate balance of this ecosystem. As the day wore on, the temperature soared. The dunes, unrelenting in their scorching beauty, shimmered under the high noon sun. I kept my eyes peeled for tourists venturing too deep into the park without adequate supplies, or the sporadic trail of litter that wore my nerves more than I care to admit. Just past noon, I found myself on crest duty, checking the conditions of the ridgelines. These dunes can be treacherous, and sudden shifts in weather could lead to potential hazards. My binoculars scoped the landscape, inspecting the telltale patterns of the sand, indicating stability or a recently occurred slip. I had just lowered my binocs, about to move to the next point, when I saw it. Now, I didn't get a clear view. Mind you, the midday sun and glinting sand wouldn't let you see a cactus till you damn near sat on it. Still, there was definitely something unusual in my field of vision. I quickly turned my head, but whatever it was had gone. The sand was untouched, save for patterns etched by the wind. I stood there staring at the serene, deadly beauty of the dunes, with a chill of unfathomable dread snaking down my spine. Who knows, I thought, heat stroke could make a man see things. Maybe I had better get myself some water and sit down for a moment. I moved on, ignoring the prickling sensation of being watched. I couldn't shake that thought that something was out there. Maybe it was nothing more than a trick of the light, a mirage, or so I hoped. Despite the silent assurance of the vast, sun-bleached landscape in front of me, unease hung over me, like a vulture circling its dying prey. I continued with my duties, patrolling the immense sandbox we call the Great Sand Dunes National Park. But as the sun plunged towards the horizon, my mind kept drifting back to the unknown creature I saw in the dunes. The dunes were eerily still through my binocs, but I couldn't shake the feeling that something was off. Back at the visitor center, as my colleague Earl was leaving his shift, I mentioned the unsettlement troubling me for the last few hours. Earl's been around for nearly as long as I have. He just smiled, acting like the old man that he is, and told me, "John, you've been looking at the sand too long." Before heading home for the day, a feeling urged me to give the dunes one final check. I drove my truck to a more remote part of the park. I was out near a bowl-like depression where the sands formed steep, undulating contours. As I peered through my binoculars, a movement caught my eye. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. It was an enormous figure. I estimated around 8 feet tall, standing upright on two legs. It had dark, rugged scales seeming to blend with the shadows. Its head looked disturbingly reptilian, complete with a pair of piercing yellow eyes that echoed an age-old savagery. My blood went ice cold. Its gaze was focused, searching, predatory even. Despite its distance from me, I could sense its intelligence. I didn't know what to think of this creature. It was both reptilian and oddly humanoid. Was I looking at a dinosaur? Just as I was about to reach for my camera, it abruptly turned and disappeared over a high ridge, swift as a bolt of lightning. In that moment, I realized my very primal human instinct of fight or flight, but I was frozen. In the fading light and confusion, I made a decision. I quickly retreated to my truck. I made it back to the safety of the station, but my mind was a whirlpool of thoughts, questions, and disbelief. I stayed up most of the night, fueled with coffee, flicking through biology and folklore books, and countless web pages of unverified cryptid sightings. Weeks have passed since the encounter, and I still can't explain what I saw. It terrifies me and intrigues me, both at the same time. All these years I thought I knew the dunes through and through. I realize now there's a lot more hidden in this vast sandbox, a lot more secrets lurking in the shadows. The only thing I can say for certain is that if you choose to venture into the wild, remember, we are the guests there. I was working up in the wilds of Alaska in the dead of winter. A part of me loved it up there, the peace and the quiet and the tranquil isolation. But another part of me regretted taking up the job. It was the kind of bone-deep cold that could freeze your thoughts along with your body. And the landscape, as beautiful as it was, had an eerie hollowness about it. And there I was, miles away from the nearest human settlement, trying to find my way back to camp after a long day of surviving a new pipeline. You'd think spending all day looking at maps and tracking through this terrain, I'd be a bit more proficient in not getting lost. But that day, Mother Nature had other plans. A blizzard came in quick, faster than I'd ever seen before. And just like that, all my landmarks were swallowed up by the snow. I remember thinking how ludicrous it was, lost in one of the most remote wildernesses in the world. How the hell had I ended up there? I've always been an adventurous person, always jumped at the chance to go off the beaten path. But this was totally off the grid. The biting cold began to seep through my winter gear. Walking became difficult. The air was so cold that my lungs hurt. I pulled my gaiter up over my nose and mouth to try to get some relief, but the condensation only started to soak it through. I tried to stay calm, to remember my training, but the darkness was rolling in fast, and the snow was unrelenting. I couldn't help but feel panic creeping in. It was as if the forest itself was alive, watching me struggle in the swirling curtain of white. I was getting so cold that I stopped near a cluster of trees, just to get out of the wind for a moment. To keep the freeze at bay, I started a small fire with the dead wood I could scrounge up. My field training had drilled the importance of staying warm and dry if lost in the backcountry, especially in this unforgiving cold. I huddled up close to the flames, trying to shake off the chill that seemed to cling to my bones. It was in the heart of this white forest that I first heard it. A distant howl cut through the stillness, echoing off the snow-covered trees surrounding me. It was unlike any creature I'd heard before. It was not a wolf, nor a pack of coyotes. I knew that much. It sent shivers down my spine, even stronger than the winter air. I stoked my fire, tried to keep it alive the best I could. I'm not going to lie. That howl had me pretty scared. I had heard a fair amount of indigenous stories, folk tales if you will, about strange things in the Alaskan wild. My mind started to wander. Was there something in these woods with me? Time seemed to drag on. Keeping the fire going was a daunting task, and the howling creature seemed to draw nearer. Maybe it was my mind playing tricks on me, but every time it called out, it sounded like it was getting closer. I hoped it was just some delusion brought on by my near hypothermic state, but then there came a smell, an odor so rancid, so sour and putrid, that it made my stomach churn and bile rise in my throat. It was the smell of death, of rotting flesh, like something that's been on the side of the road for weeks in the summer sun. The smell wasn't just close, it was all around me. Something was watching me. I could feel its gaze cut through the darkness, though I couldn't see from where. But there was some unseen presence out there. I longed for daybreak, for the hidden horrors of the night to be washed away by the first light of dawn. But until then, I was alone with whatever creature lurked in the shadows. My fire felt small and insignificant in the middle of this claustrophobic winter desolation. It provided me with a tiny fortress of safety in the presence of this unknown creature. The only thing I could do was wait, fend off the cold for as long as I could, and hope that whatever was out there didn't want to brave the firelight. As the wind gusted around me and the snow piled on, I braced myself for the longest night of my life. But one thing lived sharply in my mind, the primal fear at the back of my eyelids reminding me of the folk tales of beasts that lived within these vast, unhindered lands. I saw a shadow against the snow, a hulking mass that seemed to twist and contort within the raging white winds. Its height was impossible for most animals that lived out here. A moose, perhaps. But what would a moose be doing out in this kind of a storm? Any animal with survival instincts would be hunkered down somewhere warm. My heart pounded in my chest as my gaze trailed upwards, catching sight of antlers protruding from its head. They looked like the antlers of an elk, but when it came closer, I could tell it was anything but. Its face was white as bone and skinless. There was hair and hide covering the rest of its body, but it looked like the head had been skinned and the hide peeled away. There was no nose or eyes. This thing was not from this world. I knew that much. Nothing could have survived its entire head being skinned and all the muscle pulled away. And how could it see without eyes? The legs were long and spindly, not unlike those of an elk or a deer, but it moved with an eerie grace, even within the blizzard's chaotic grasp. As it edged closer, the smell of rotting flesh intensified. What do you even do in that kind of a situation? Scream? Run? I did neither. The terror that seized me was paralytic. But then, something even more bizarre happened. The creature looked right at me with its empty eye sockets. I sincerely thought I was going to die at that moment, but it just stood there. It made some silent decision, and then it began to move, not toward me, but away through the trees. I don't know what I was thinking, but I felt an undeniable urge to follow it, so I did. I was pretty sure I was dead anyway. The snow kept falling, and I was starting to get hypothermic now for real. I didn't have anything to lose. I followed the beast for what felt like an eternity, stumbling through the dense woods. The creature moved slowly, as if it was waiting for me to catch up. Was it leading me to my death? At that moment, the only thing I cared about was getting out of the cold, any way I could. The dawn was beginning to break when finally, I saw the familiar outline of my camp emerging out of the snowstorm. I turned to look back, but the creature was already dissipating into the frosty thicket, its monstrous form disappearing amidst the growing light of day. Just like that, it was gone. I was left standing there half frostbitten, half delirious, and utterly bewildered. Was it truly guiding me, or was I merely fortunate that its path coincided with my own? I guess the latter is easier to swallow, but a small part of me dares to believe in the former. I still think about that encounter often. I've heard all the stories, but I haven't heard any where the creature helps someone instead of harms them, but that's what happened to me. Why did it do what it did? Your guess is as good as mine.
So I have this strange story. It's about something I encountered in the woods outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee, that I never felt right keeping to myself. Now, I'm a retired widower, and there isn't much to do when the rest of the world's turned in for the night. It gives me time to spend with Daisy, my bloodhound. After decades spent wrestling with the daily grind, these days I'm much more interested in the call of the wild, the quiet of nature. So Daisy and I took to spending our days in the woods, training in survival skills. You know, building a shelter, starting a fire without a lighter, those sorts of things. Hours turned into days, days into weeks, and weeks into months in those woods.
Daisy and I were working on setting up camp. She'd fetch me sticks for the fire, tail wagging all the while, and I'd made a makeshift shelter and a circle of rocks for the fire. I was just about to start working on gathering kindling when a low growl rumbled through the calm late afternoon. I straightened up, glancing down at Daisy. She stood frozen, ears pricked up, her tail hanging straight. I'd never seen her act like this, not in all our time out there. I figured it was probably a deer or something. You know, the woods are full of animals all minding their own business. But Daisy didn't relax. Her growl grew deeper, her eyes fixed on something in the tree line that I couldn't see. I squinted into the deepening darkness, feeling the first prickle of unease. Beads of sweat started trickling down my back, hot and sticky. But it wasn't the humidity. There was something about the low rumble in Daisy's throat, a rare hostility in her eyes, that made me uncomfortable. Then I heard the movement of leaves in the distance, a twig snapping, the thunderous rush of something big moving quickly, too quickly, through the underbrush. I remember a smell. It was a whiff of something foul. It hit me like a strong gust of wind, a nauseating combination of fetid swamp and sulfur. I didn't know what was there, and let me tell you, I couldn't have guessed if I tried. All I could do was trust that Daisy sensed danger, and Lord knows she hasn't ever been wrong about this sort of thing before. All my senses were alert, but nothing could prepare me for the looming figure that stepped out of the shadows. Enhancing the mystery of it all, what I saw in that moment was hard to understand, let alone describe. It was tall and stood, I'd swear to anyone, at least 6 feet. It blocked out the remaining daylight, ink black against the setting sun. Its body was muscled, almost skeletal, and there was, God, how can I put it, a bizarre scariness to it as it rustled and shifted. It was like a dragon, maybe, or a bat. Its glow in the dark eyes were fixed on me, burning with intensity like the hot embers of a raging fire. It was at that moment I realized that Daisy and I weren't alone. I could hear the thing breathing, taking deep, raspy breaths that seemed to echo eerily through the clearing. I can't tell you what it looked like, not properly. It was the most peculiar creature, like nothing I'd seen on Animal Planet or in any of the zoos. Daisy's growl was the only thing that felt reassured, and just when a part of me wanted to bolt, something else held me rooted to the spot, a strange sense of fascination. Or was it fear? It's hard to say. I got to my feet, clutching onto Daisy. That's when the beast roared. I say roared because it wasn't like any animal noise I'd ever heard. It was a blood-curdling, raspy hack. It was like something ripped straight out of the pits of hell. Still, consider me foolhardy, but I held my ground. Daisy was shaking like a leaf, but she was meticulously trained and didn't run. I wanted to get a better look, even though every instinct was screaming at me to run. As my eyes adjusted to the dim light, I discerned a sort of exterior skeleton. Its body was a horrid blend of animal and goblin-like features, with a tint of something eerily human. Its face seemed twisted into a semi-permanent sneer of ridicule, or maybe just sadistic pleasure. The eyes were not the soft, luminescent dots they first appeared to be. They were glowingly malevolent, like twin fiery orbs. Its body, long and skeletal, glistened with a dark, almost scaled skin. I saw something that seemed a cross between bat-like wings and a lizard's body. The defining moment was when it unfurled its colossal hawked legs, making its entire figure stretch to nearly 10 feet. And there, protruding from its skull, were two grotesque horns. Our gaze met. Then, faster than my mind could comprehend, the creature lurched towards us. I reacted instinctively, pulling Daisy and running towards where I thought our camp was. Behind me, I could hear the frenzied beast giving chase. The way Daisy was growling at it, I knew the danger was as real as it gets. We reached the makeshift camp, got in our rusted pickup, and raced out of there. The creature had halted at the edge of the forest line, its unwavering eyes glowing ominously in the light from the tail lamp of the vehicle. As I drove away, I watched it watch me through the rearview mirror until it was just a blip against the landscape. I spent many nights after that, staring out into the dark, gnawing on my nails and wondering if what I'd seen was real. The thought kept me awake more often than not. Daisy was upset for a while, but soon got back to her playful self. But even she couldn't erase the disquiet that had settled in me. Weeks later, I met an old hunter at the local watering hole who used to explore those very woods. When I related my story, there was neither disbelief nor mockery in his eyes. Instead, he whispered something that made goosebumps break out onto my flesh: Jersey Devil. According to him, this creature has been seen by only a handful of the residents over the years. But who knows? What I do know is that from that day on, I had my tales to tell. Would I ever go back? Probably not. But the forests with their enticing wilderness still hold an eternal allure to a man like me. For however terrifying the encounter was, it reminded me of the mystery that's the world we live in. I really think that others need to hear this tale.
It was the late spring of 2015. Boring start here. I'm sorry, but bear with me. Back then, I was a plumber by trade in the heart of Santiago, Chile. Life was routine. Go to work, fix leaky pipes, and clog toilets, head home, and repeat. Nothing was ever out of the ordinary, except for this one job. Nobody likes the job that comes in late on a Friday. Structural issues down at the Santiago subway, they said. An entire tunnel was flooded. Who wants to go waist deep into the subway's plumbing after a long week of work? Not me.
I was hesitant going in, and not just because I was eager for the weekend. I'd been to the subway countless times, but never in the dead of night. Never inside its murky, stinking underbelly. I talked myself into the job by offering a trip into the desert as my little weekend reward. The Atacama Desert, stretching north of Santiago, had always fascinated me. So I figured, fix the leak in a record time, then head to the desert. It's a bizarre kind of vacation, I admit. Something about the vastness, the desolation. It's the driest place on earth, you know. It made me feel small, in a good way, if that's possible. Down in the subway, the fluorescent lights casted a haunting glow, like low-hanging fog. I spotted water seeping from a jagged crack in the wall. It reeked something awful, like the smell of the deep earth mixed with rotting garbage or sulfur. It was more than just a puddle. The enclosed space was almost flooded. Whoever was on the previous shift must have been asleep. I waded carefully through the murky water, tools in hand. But my usually methodical demeanor was compromised as strange things started happening. As soon as I switched on my flashlight, the thick darkness peeled away to reveal the wet cement walls glistening with an odd sheen. The subway's usual soundtrack of dripping water and distant rumbling trains was now replaced by a peculiar hum. A weird feeling took hold of me. Something wasn't right. Something moved. I saw a flicker of movement in the wet gloom from the corner of my eye. Whirling around, I scanned the eerie space, but the beam of trusty flashlight revealed nothing except the shiny wet surfaces. The space seemed to shudder in the artificial light, but there was no one there. The closer I got to the leak, the stronger the smell became. I highlighted the crack in the wall. It was almost 4 feet up, odd for a waterline. The leak wasn't your standard waterline burst either. My flashlight illuminated the suspended droplets, each one cloudy and bizarre. Just water mixed with dirt, I tried to reassure myself. But the uncomfortable suspicion was rapidly turning into a knowing dread. Had it become quieter? I had not realized how muted the subway had become. The silence was as palpable as the stench. Suddenly, the beam of my flashlight fell onto shapes that were lurking on the wall, right beside the crack. There they were, 3, 4, maybe 5 figures darting in the shadows, humanoid, yet not quite. My heart pounded in my chest. I moved my light to get a better look, but something interrupted me, something in my mind, an intrusive thought, or rather, a series of them, like a record playing in my head. Warnings, please. My knees weakened as I struggled to comprehend their source. Do not come closer. Leave this place. But whose voice was it? The creatures were short, maybe 4 feet tall at the highest. They looked skinny and their heads were unusually large for their frames. They would have been comical if my skin wasn't already crawling. The dark subway tunnel made it difficult to make out their features, but one thing was evident: their eyes. Two enormous pitch-black ovals on each face that seemed to absorb the light from my flashlight. I was paralyzed, caught between the urge to fix the problem and to run from a situation way above my pay grade. Suddenly, a bright light flooded the area. I looked up and a circular object, the size of a small car, floated down from above my head. It was like nothing I'd seen before. The strange beings I had met all came from this spaceship. Now it felt like they were inviting me on board. Unlikely as it seems, I found myself joining them. Inside, everything was alien yet familiar. A round space with tables made out of a material that looked like glass, but wasn't. The air smelled cleaner, sanitized almost. I was shelved onto a small hovering seat by the large-headed creature. Unable to resist, I began taking in the dashboard illuminated with an array of colors I can't quite describe. The colors made symbols that I can't quite remember. Like the first lesson of a foreign language, the dialect just doesn't stick. My mind became a whirlpool of questions and fascination. Yet everything else was drowned out as one of the humanoid figures began to communicate with me. There was no sound in the traditional sense, only a soft whisper that seemed to echo in my mind. I sound crazy, don't I? I told you this story was more than its boring beginning. The creature shared details about where they had come from and why they were here. Like everything else about them, the information was too much to take in. Memories of my teenage years with my head buried in science fiction books came rushing back. This was nothing like those stories. My spine felt like one long icicle. The whispers grew stronger. The next thing I knew, I was standing back in the desert. The figures in their ship already disappeared, like a dream evaporating at dawn. But it was no dream, I know that. The enormous expanse of the barren, lifeless land around me suddenly seemed smaller than I remembered. Maybe I was too aware of the space above us, of our place in the stars. It was almost as if I could still feel the creature's presence. Their telepathic whispers echoed faintly in my mind. How could I go back to my mundane life fixing pipes after that, after experiencing something so out of this world? The loneliness of the Atacama Desert pressed down on me even more. I felt a deep ache of homesickness for my simple life. Not that I could shake off my sense of awe, obviously. Fascination was humming beneath my skin. I was trembling. It was a physical reaction to the otherworldly encounter I had that night. I still shake from time to time. Looking back, I wish I could say something more profound about my encounter, some insight about life that affected me profoundly. All I can say is this: I've never forgotten that smell of alien sulfur. And every time I catch a whiff of it, I find myself simultaneously worried and hopeful. For even under the immense Chilean sky, I've realized we are never truly alone. And so, despite my solitude in the Atacama, I've found a sense of unity. I still hope to see them again one day, even if it's just to ask a few of the thousands of questions bubbling in my mind. Trust me, the universe holds more mysteries than we on Earth could ever comprehend.